For the past 5 years, I have been training for the ministry. And as part of that training, I spent 5 months last year as a chaplain intern at Sharp Memorial Hospital and at Mary Birch Hospital. Together with other interns and residents and staff chaplains, I was part of the team that provided pastoral care for the hundreds of patients who are present every day in those hospitals. And with that background, I think I can say that The Rabbit Listened is one of the simplest and best representations of what chaplaincy can be. The Rabbit Listened, and of course, chaplains do more than listen. We can provide a different perspective if one is needed. We can help patients fit their experiences into their religious beliefs. We can provide rituals of prayer and of blessing and of grief and thanks. But listening is behind it all. The chicken, the bear, the elephant, the hyena, the ostrich, the kangaroo, and the snake, they all had good ideas about what might help Taylor. But the rabbit was able to stay quietly with Taylor and wait until Taylor was ready. Now, not every patient interaction I had was like this, of course. Sometimes patients were convinced that the chaplain would want to convert them or to make them feel guilty for not going to church often enough. Sometimes it was hard to have uninterrupted time with a patient. And of course, sometimes a patient just doesn't want to see a chaplain. But because of the times when things really worked, this experience was one of the most powerful ones of my life. It was a chance to help people experience a different way of being together, a chance for a patient to be with someone who values their experience and their needs and who listens just because they have inherent worth. For me, it was a chance to participate in ministry. And this type of experience leads to the question that I would like to consider with you here today. Why are we here? And I don't mean that in some kind of vast metaphysical question of existence or anything like that. I mean it in a very concrete, literal sense. Why are we, you and me, here in this room on a lovely Sunday morning? What is it that brings you here? How is this congregation different from all of the other communities that you have in your life? What experience do we find here that we may not find elsewhere? Now, I've had various answers to this question myself over the years, and today I'd like to explore one possible one that is ringing true to me at this time. The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Diego is a place where you can participate in ministry, where you can learn and practice ways of being with one another and with the world that are hard to find elsewhere. This congregation is a place where you can participate in ministry. But of course, this leads to the question, what is ministry? And what kind of ministries are available to you here? And to answer that question, I thought maybe we could look at the things that ministers are trained to do, because those are relevant to me at the moment. I was a student at Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, and Star King requires that all graduates have experience with 8 ministerial roles. Graduates need to know how to be, first, a pastor, someone who leads a spiritual community. Second, a prophet, someone who calls people and institutions to hold themselves to their highest values. Third, a teacher, someone skilled in helping people learn about spiritual practices and religious concepts and history. Fourth, a scholar, someone who has studied religious history and can connect it to current events. Fifth, a theologian, someone who has studied and understands different theological traditions and perspectives. Sixth, a preacher, someone who can effectively communicate spiritual and religious ideas. Seventh, a liturgist, someone who can create and lead effective, nourishing, transformative worship services. And eighth, a chaplain, someone who accompanies and supports people through struggles and joys. I'd like to take a quick look at each of these roles and see how this congregation provides opportunities for you to participate in them. Some of them may not appeal to you personally, and that's okay, because everyone has different strengths and different callings, and even ministers are better at some of these things than others. So let's start with the role of a pastor. Being a pastor means leading a spiritual community. How do you hold space for a group that is working on a project? How do you get things done in a way that honors everybody's ideas and contributions? We do deep, difficult, emotional work at church, and it's not always appropriate to bind that work up into Robert's Rules of Order. So spiritual leadership, pastoring, requires sensitivity and flexibility. Now, Unitarian Universalists are kind of notorious for being hard to manage, because our tradition includes a strong thread of individualism. But we are also a covenantal faith, and this is where we find our strength. Here at UUFSD, you have many talented leaders, and here you can learn how even a bunch of individualists can get together and work for a better world. Now, the prophet has always played an important role in society. Being prophetic means calling people and institutions to hold themselves to their highest values and to do what is right. In this current time, prophetic leadership from religious institutions is critically needed in order to address racism and economic injustice and to prevent war and other state violence. This can feel daunting. And I have to admit that when I first started studying for ministry, I was scared when I thought of the responsibilities of prophetic leadership. I thought of the protest movements that I have seen in my lifetime, from the civil rights movements of the 60s and 70s through to Ferguson and Standing Rock, and I wondered, would I be brave enough? Would I be brave enough to lead people to face down the water cannons and the police dogs? But I've learned something over these years of study. Not all prophetic leadership is so dramatic. Smaller, quieter leadership counts as well. For example, since 2003, this congregation has been an official LGBTQ welcoming congregation. And that counts. You are living into your values and doing what is right when not everyone else is. That also is prophetic leadership. And the second thing that I've learned is that with some experience and with some practice, those larger prophetic calls, the ones that feel more frightening, they become a little less frightening when you can do them with people that you know and you trust. So take the opportunity to find your own prophetic voice here. You can find it by writing letters. You can find it by registering people to vote. You can find it in protest marches, and you can find it in civil disobedience. But you can learn how to use your prophetic voice here, and you can then take that into the wider world. Now, the role of teacher is a familiar one, and there are many opportunities at this fellowship to practice it. You can do this formally by volunteering in the religious education program, or less formally, you can get practice with teaching whenever there's someone who wants to learn something and that you're in a position to help them. Teaching leads to learning and to the closely related roles of scholar and theologian. For both of these ministry roles, it is important to remember that learning is not just about reading books and attending lectures. It's about participation and conversation and movement and practice. Scholarship here at UUFSD is available in adult RE classes, in classes in spiritual practice, and in various small group ministries. So the opportunities for learning are everywhere. Next, we come to the roles of the preacher and the liturgist. Liturgy is the art of creating a meaningful, powerful worship service. This happens through the hard work of many people, the musicians in the band and on staff, the worship associates, the ushers, the people in the sound booth, the ministers, the hospitality team. They all come together to create worship and rituals that nourish us throughout the week. And creating ritual, creating worshipful spaces, those are skills that we can use outside of church as well, in our homes, with our families, with our friends. Even just taking a moment before a meal to pause, to hold hands, to think of the people who are present and how precious they are, and to consider the work, the effort that went into creating the food. Even a simple ritual like this can change the way we view our day and can change the way we view our lives. Now, preaching has traditionally been done mostly by our ministers, but worship associates and lay speakers also move us with their words. There are few places in our lives where we have the chance to practice this skill, but this church is one of them. And the right words, effectively delivered, can change the world. Finally, we reach the role of chaplain. Earlier, we had the story of the rabbit who listened, and you've heard me speak about hospital chaplaincy. But what about your own experience? If you will, I'd like you to pause for a moment, and if you're comfortable doing so, I'd ask that you close your eyes. I'd like you to think of a time when you have been there for someone. Think of a time when just by being there, you helped a friend or a relative, an acquaintance, or even a stranger. What did it feel like to be that helping presence? Now think of a time when someone has been there for you. It doesn't have to be a big event, but just a time when someone's presence helped you to calm down and to get through. What did that feel like for you? What did that person's care mean for you? Come back now to this place, open your eyes, but remember and carry with you that feeling of being cared for. That is what the role of the chaplain can provide. And here at UUFSD, you can learn how to do that better. You can be there for someone, and when you need help, there will be someone here for you. If you bring that compassionate care to other parts of your life as well, you can help heal the world. So, there are 8 roles that your ministers have trained for and that you can learn about and participate in. These roles are one of the things that make a church community unique. And by being more aware of them, you can better appreciate and participate in your congregation. But I also have another motivation for bringing these roles to your attention. Because your views on ministry matter. Who is a minister? Who can be a minister? What does a minister look like? What does a minister do? Of the 8 roles that I've spoken of, are some of them more important than others? Or does it depend on the minister and on the situation? At UUFSD right now, your thoughts on these issues will help you choose your next settled minister, someone who will help guide your community for years. And as you are in this position of facing a choice and a question, I'd like to tell you a story from our faith's history that shows how much disagreement there has been about what is important in ministry. The story is about the Unitarians and the Universalists, the 2 strands of Christianity that evolved over time and merged and developed into the Unitarian Universalist faith that we have today. Now, in America, Unitarianism developed out of an academic religious controversy in the early 1800s in New England. And so, from the very beginning, it was just assumed that only people with advanced academic degrees could be Unitarian ministers. For the Universalists, though, it was a different matter. The defining belief of the Universalists was that a loving God would not send people to hell for all eternity. And Universalists in America sometimes came to this belief through intense personal experience rather than through academic reasoning. For example, George de Benneville, the man after whom the UU Retreat Center in the mountains is named, George de Benneville had a series of intense personal visions that converted him to Universalism. And because of experiences like those that de Benneville had, Universalist ministers were often called from other walks of life, and many had little or no academic training. Their ministerial strengths were usually not primarily as traditional scholars. Often their strength was preaching so that they could spread the good news that they had experienced personally. And there's a wonderful story that dramatizes this difference. So way back in 1832, Aidan Ballou was installed as the minister of First Church in Mendon, Massachusetts. And even though Ballou was a Universalist, 4 of the 8 ministers who participated in his installation were Unitarians. And Ballou wrote in his autobiography that it took no little moral courage for those Unitarians to associate in public with Universalists. There were theological differences, of course, but in addition, Ballou writes, the Unitarians had to overcome their self-regard. As Ballou explained, Unitarians were, quote, largely a well-educated class of people, and they nursed the pride of having a highly educated ministry. Ballou wrote that in the eyes of most Unitarians, the Universalists were, quote, unlearned and ignorant, only a trifle better schooled, perhaps, than Jesus himself and his original 12 apostles, without a doctoral degree among them, and little better than barbarians when compared to the graduates of Harvard College. Only a trifle better schooled, perhaps, than Jesus himself. I love this story, partly because it's nice to know that the 19th century Universalists could throw a little shade when they were called upon to do so, but also because it shows how there is disagreement in our history about what parts of ministry are valuable. This universalist criticism continues to this day. 2 years ago, the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Institutional Change found that Unitarian Universalists do not value the culturally relevant skills of people of color, and that instead we value academic skills, the written word, and certain forms of formal presentation, like the one I'm giving you now. In 1832, Aidan Ballou saw the same thing. That's 2 centuries of criticism about the same thing in our faith. And with 2 centuries of history behind it, it's no wonder that this academicism and the classism and the white supremacy culture that come along with it, it's no wonder that this academicism is baked into our requirements for new ministers. Now, it's important that our new ministers are qualified and that they're ready to be accountable to their peers and to the people to whom they will minister. But I have to ask, is requiring that all potential ministers spend 3 years and at least $60,000 in tuition on a master's degree, is that the best way to ensure that ministers will have this accountability? Because this requirement comes at a price. I think of people I know who felt a call to ministry, but who were alienated by the academic emphasis of seminary. I think the burden I have seen borne by seminarians of color who found themselves isolated or othered in seminary spaces that were supposed to provide deep sharing and commitment. I think of people I know who could not afford to spend $60,000 on tuition. I think of all of these people and I wonder how many of them could have and do have valuable ministries, but how many of them will not make it through our ministerial credentialing process? The rabbit listened. Some of you, like the rabbit, are called to be chaplains, to help others in their times of need. Some of you are good at leading movements and fighting for social justice. Some of you are scholars, and some are inspired preachers. All of these ministries are present in this congregation. May these ministries change your life, and may the ministries that you create change this congregation and our faith.